I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Achieving one's potential, being more productive, being resilient, and sustaining a high level of performance are not impossible goals to attain. They are certainly made easier after reading a new book, Mindful Leadership, The 9 Ways to Self-Awareness, Transforming Yourself, and Inspiring Others. Its author, Maria Gonzalez, joins me now. She is the founder and president of Argonauta Strategic Alliances Consulting, which has worked on numerous strategic alliances in both the private and public sector. She's a veteran of the banking industry, having held senior positions at BMO Financial Group, the Royal Bank of Canada, Scotiabank, as well as Crown Life Insurance. She's also taught at McGill in their Desjardins Faculty of Management. This is her second book. She previously co-authored The Mindful Investor. We'll ask Ms. Gonzalez about the idea of mindfulness, first what it is and how we can be better leaders. You don't have to be a CEO or a president of a company to glean value from these lessons. Ms. Gonzalez, in clear, accessible writing, offers great advice. The book is published by Wiley. The website for more is at argonautaconsulting.com. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program from Toronto this morning, Maria Gonzalez. Ms. Gonzalez, good morning.
Good morning, Dizza. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
What is the name of the imprint that published the book? Is that Jossie Bass?
Jossie Bass, that's right.
Jossie Bass. And that's
a leadership book publisher owned by Wiley.
By Wiley, I see. So this company I mentioned, Argonauta Strategic Alliances, you founded that. Tell me about that. What sort of work do you do with the company, and who do you do business with?
Well, this company started 11 years ago, and it was created in order to create successful strategic alliances, meaning joint ventures, mergers and acquisitions, those sorts of partnerships. And what was happening at the time, which continues to happen, is that alliances by and large tend to fail. And they tend to fail because the aspirations of both parties are really not aligned. And so the intention of that particular organization, Argonauta, is to create successful strategic alliances. Now, the reason why those alliances do work when we work on them is simply because of the application of mindfulness to alliances. So there's a wide variety of applications when we look at the field of mindfulness to absolutely anything, whether it's in business, professional, personal life, etc. Now, over the years, one of the things that happened is that Argonauta became more and more involved in pure mindfulness and its application to business in particular. And what was happening is, while I was negotiating complex deals, clients at the time would say, "And how were you able to be calm and focused while we were dealing with these particular issues that we really thought, for instance, what might have cost us a deal?" And for me, the response really was, "Well, I was meditating. Everything I do is around mindfulness, and it's just working a moment at a time and dealing with whatever needs to be done in a given moment." So individuals then became, those very same clients became much more interested in, "So if that's the case, can you help us develop that skill? Can you train us to do that?" So, and now, Argonauta spends the majority of its time training business people and professionals on how to be more mindful and apply it to every aspect of their lives.
And so the companies that you deal with, we're talking, without giving names, I mean, you don't have to, these big companies, little companies, medium-sized companies, what are they?
The entire gamut.
Yeah.
And typically, it starts with working with the business leader, who finds success, their own success, in applying the techniques and having developed the skill. And once that happens, generally speaking, I get brought in to work with the entire team or to offer it to the organization. But it all generally, it starts with a coaching relationship with a particular individual. All of the work that I do, I would say probably 95 to 98% of the people I work with are all referrals.
Now, you've mentioned mindfulness a couple of times now. That's the title of the book. People listening to us might not know what that is. Well, what is mindfulness?
Mindfulness is really the development of a skill, and it's a skill that is simply about noticing the way things are, how to be in the present moment, how to be with exactly what's arising moment by moment, not pushing it away, not attaching to it, but just being with it. And all it is a skill. It's a three-attentional skill set. It's the development of concentration, which is to be able to focus on whatever it is you wish to focus on for as long as you wish. Clarity, which is an aspect of the skill around being able to see things the way they truly are, meaning how we're being impacted by others and how we impact others with clarity, seeing how we can make decisions more clearly, have better judgment, etc. And the third is equanimity. And equanimity is a technical term in mindfulness, which is really about, it's a matter of factness about the way things are. It's just, it is what it is. And the aspect of skill in that area, which is so important, is that if you can't change something, then you go with it. But the minute you are able to change it, you now have a choice. You have a choice as to whether you'll change it or not. And that's really the skill of equanimity. And mindfulness itself comes from a 2,500-year-old tradition. It's a tradition in, it's actually the original meditation that the Buddha did before Buddhism became a religion. And the beauty of mindfulness is that it can be learned and taught in a purely secular way without any focus on religion or faith or belief system. And that's the beauty of it, and that's why it's expanding so quickly in the West, because we can apply it to our regular lives personally and professionally without any of the cultural implications that we may not be familiar with or understand.
How did you come to practice it?
I started to practice it more than 20 years ago. At the time, I was working with I was working full-time in a senior role at the Royal Bank. And in addition to that, I was also teaching at McGill University. I was teaching strategy in particular in the MBA program and BCom programs. And I was doing both of those things, having a great deal of success and also feeling pretty stressed, simply because I was doing a lot of travel. There were a lot of demands. I love what I did, but you can imagine that it was a stressful time. And I was fortunate enough that Jon Kabat-Zinn was coming to the university to talk about mindfulness. And I thought that was tremendously interesting because, coincidentally, the week before, I had seen his book at the airport and had picked it up and was very interested in what he had to say. And I have never looked back. I listened to his talk, and I knew that this was something I wanted and needed to learn. And so I immediately started to take courses. And so I've studied mindfulness, I've studied Vajrayana, Tibetan Vajrayana, and Zen, and have been fascinated by how applicable it is to our lives and how it actually transforms our lives.
And so can you quantify for us just how it's changed your life?
Absolutely. It informs and impacts absolutely everything that I do on a very simple level. It enables me to have a conversation with someone, whether it's a client or a friend, a colleague, and be able to be fully present and not have the mind wander at all. It enables me to stay focused so that I can see what it is that they're really trying to say, and sometimes they're saying it, other times they're not necessarily articulating exactly what they might wish to say. And when you're fully present, you're able to see all that. And what it does, first of all, it makes your time much more efficient because meetings are cut short by a great deal, in some cases almost in half, because nobody's repeating the same thing twice because you've focused. But what it also does is it helps you anticipate needs. And so for me, when it comes to sitting with a client, it helps me to identify how I might best be able to serve them. The other thing that it does, so that ability to mindfully speak and mindfully listen is one of the greatest benefits that I've experienced. The other is that ability to see how it is that others are impacting you, and that, for instance, when you're being triggered and knowing that you're not going to respond from that place, you're going to be aware of what's arising within you but actually respond in an appropriate way. And probably Viktor Frankl really said it best in terms of that gap between stimulus and response. And with mindfulness, what happens is the gap between stimulus and response widens so that, in essence, you have a choice. You have a choice as to how it is that you're going to respond to another person rather than just being triggered by a circumstance, by a comment, by your mood. I would say that's probably one of the greatest gifts, is that gap, to be able to, in that moment, have the freedom to choose, a response rather than a reaction. So those would probably be two examples that I would give. Probably a third example is the ability to be fully present while you're doing other things, whether it's working out, taking a walk, just to be able to enjoy what is there and not be caught in memory or fantasy about the future. So it really, it absolutely has transformed my life. There's no doubt about that.
And in meditation, I mean, you've mentioned that that's a big part of this. How often do you do that a day?
Oh, I meditate an hour a day, mm-hmm. Every day. It's just part of what I do. It's part of my routine. But in terms of the people that I coach, it really doesn't have to be that long. For some people, that kind of time would speak to them. For others, not at all. People can experience benefit in terms of practicing mindfulness with as little as 10 minutes a day. Because really, all you're doing is you're training a skill. You're training yourself to be in the present moment and to be aware. And there's a great deal of research around that. In fact, last week I just came back from the Harvard Medical School, where a number of us had been invited, experienced meditators had been invited to participate in a research study where you were given a particular techniques to practice. And from that, they with functional MRIs, would look at our brains to see what was going on at the time when that was happening. And so there's a lot of very good research that has been underway for a number of years, for over a decade, and continues to be done in terms of, you know, how can the brain be rewired with mindfulness techniques? And we've seen good research to indicate that that is in fact the case.
See, we don't think of business and meditation as going together. Well, a business leader might say to you, well, I just don't have time, Maria.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the first step, I guess, in figuring out how to work it in the schedule if need be, and getting over the sort of the initial fears of it or the whatever problems one might have with meditation.
That's a very astute point, Joseph, absolutely. What happens is, my experience is that the majority of people that come to me have come as a result of a referral, meaning someone else that they know, another business leader has experienced benefit, and they've recommended it. So people tend to be already a little bit predisposed, only because they've seen someone else benefit, not because they necessarily inherently believe in it. So a lot of it is, how do you work this into your routine? Well, there are lots of ways of working it into the routine. One is many business people travel. And travel is a perfect time to meditate, to use the particular techniques. Another time is when you work out. So if you absolutely can't find 10 minutes to sit, to actually formally sit, you can do it while you're working out using specific techniques that we can, you know, that we develop for that. You can do it while walking. And there are times where people will say, you know, I kind of like to start my day that way. And you spend 10 minutes at the very beginning of your day before your cup of coffee following specific techniques. Now, these techniques range. One of the first ones that we work with is around relaxation. And I don't know anybody that couldn't use a little bit more relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really an easy sell in terms of, you know, how can you relax the body? The minute you start relaxing the body, the mind also starts to loosen up. So the minute you start practicing, we find that benefit is experienced very quickly. And as a result, people become more and more motivated. But that's only one aspect of it. My bias is that I really like people to work on not just the formal technique, but to work with something that I call strategies for mindfulness in action. And that means, as you're sitting in a meeting, actually applying the techniques in action. When you're cooking a meal, applying it in action. When you're having a discussion, applying those in action. Making a presentation, sitting with your board, doing a performance review, it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you're a doctor, seeing a patient and being mindful as you're doing that. So there are ways of applying those techniques in action so that, in fact, you're developing that skill moment by moment throughout your day. So that if in a given day you can't afford to sit and practice formally, then you would probably spend a little bit more time in action. And you would be amazed at how quickly people develop. And pretty soon, when they don't practice, that's when they really miss it, when they notice it.
And thinking about the present and being in the moment, is one of the tenets of mindfulness, doesn't mean that we're developing myopia, that we're not thinking about the future, right?
Not at all. In fact, thank you for asking that. That's a very important question, because that's a misconception.
Yeah.
People often say, if I'm in the present all the time, when will I ever plan for what I need to plan for? The reality is that we want to be in the present while we're doing whatever we're doing, which means that if we're planning, we want to be in the present planning, meaning that we're not thinking about, oh my gosh, what if this plan doesn't work, or wandering off into other escapades of while you're actually planning. It means that when you're planning, you're really planning. And of course you're planning for the future. That's absolutely important. It's essential. So, no, thank you for asking that question. It means being in the present with whatever you're doing, including planning, including reflecting on the past, so that you may reflect on the past in terms of, you know, something went really, really well, and I want to think about that. I want to think about, why did it go well? Or it didn't go well. I want to really understand what I could do better next time. So you're thinking about the past, but you're doing it in the present for something useful rather than ruminating, which is really the issue.
Now, when you pick up the newspaper, you read the business section or the political section of the paper, and you read about leaders and what's going on in the world. Do you find that a lot of these qualities that you've been talking about in terms of mindfulness, which you know, when I listen to you and I read the book, and I mean they just seem like a no-brainer. Do you find that they're lacking in our discourse, whether it's in business today or in politics?
I think in essence the composite of the nine ways as a composite is lacking.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is that there are, if we look at the nine ways, it's, you know, to be present, to be aware, to be calm, to be focused, to be clear, to be equanimous, to be positive, to be compassionate, and to be impeccable. And you're right, Joseph, those are they're no-brainers, really. I mean, they're just about, essentially about decency, about being effective, about being efficient. That's really what it's about. The issue, however, is that when we're under stress, a lot of these things go by the wayside. And our society is experiencing a great deal of stress. And unless we learn how to manage that, all of these other things that are no-brainers become an issue, and they become scarce. What I would point out is that those nine ways are not, it's not a game of perfect. So it's not as if you have to absolutely do all nine at a supremely high level in order to say, yeah, I'm being successful. The reality is that we're good at some, or we're better at some points than
right.
others,
mm-hmm.
on certain days more than others, and it really is more of an aspiration. So when I look at what's going on in the world today, what I see is society, almost anywhere in the world, that is tremendously stressed, that isn't handling stress well, that has an aspiration to handle it better, but they really don't necessarily know how, and as a result, many of these things do get compromised.
So how do we go back, other than buying the book?
Buying the book is a really good idea.
Right.
The reality, I think, is that we need to go back to basics. We need to go back to really listening to people, to, you know, capturing the lost art of conversation, what we're having right now. There's really no substitute for really listening to another being. There's no substitute for really having a sense of what I talk about in mindful leadership, really becoming very clear about the fact that we're here to be of service. We're here to serve one another, which should never be confused with being subservient. We're here to take care of one another's needs. And in so doing, you know, if I were to relate that to, for instance, negotiating a deal, if I can make you supremely successful in a negotiation, there's no way I can lose. And, you know, in essence, we make one another successful. So it really is going back to the basics of taking care of our needs and serving one another. But how can we do that? Well, when we're stressed, we can't do that. So I think the very first thing is to be able to manage one's stress. And we do that a number of ways. Mindfulness is one. There are other ways, of course. And in combination, for example, exercise is an excellent way of managing stress. But I would say that you need to go the next step, and the next step is, how are you going to be fully present? And so one of the ways of being fully present is to use mindfulness or other techniques that allow you to do that. We tend to think that more more is better, bigger is better. And in reality, if we can't possibly absorb what we gain in a digestible kind of way, why do we think that more is going to be better? So to be able to be fully present with what we have and to train ourselves to do that, to develop that skill, I think is the way back.
Maria, I've really enjoyed the book and the conversation today. Continued good luck with the book.
Thank you very much, Joseph. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
The same. The website for more is at argonautaconsulting.com. The book is called Mindful Leadership, The 9 Ways to Self-Awareness, Transforming Yourself and Inspiring Others. It's just a difficult book to put down, and anybody can find something in the book to add to their life that'll be useful. Jossie Bass is the publisher. That's an imprint of Wiley. It's author. Maria Gonzalez on the line from Toronto in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.